Hello everyone, this is the first episode of Average Yu-Gi-Oh! Players Podcast. So I do have a YouTube channel called Average Yu-Gi-Oh! Player, so feel free to check that out and subscribe. So Yu-Gi-Oh! Is an expensive game, but a lot of fun if you have people to play with or if you go to some level of tournaments. So I am an average Yu-Gi-Oh! Player in that I have been in and out of the game of Yu-Gi-Oh! I started around the time of Blue Eyes and Dark Magician and Relinquished and Red Eyes. I quit around the time of Elemental Heroes, so I missed the whole Synchro era. I came back for XYZs. I played Gyrgia, which is a pretty good budget deck if you want to just buy three copies of the structure deck. I quit again, then came back for Pendulums, Performer Pal, and Magician. Again, bought the Magician structure deck. Then I quit once more, and I came back for Link Strike and bought a bunch of those Decode Talkers, the Transcode Talkers, all those Cybers-themed structure decks. So I'm also average in that I go to locals about once a month nowadays. Since getting back into Yu-Gi-Oh! In 2017, I take the game a little bit more seriously. I study the meta a little bit harder. I usually take Pendulum Magician. I did take Tele Knights, though, one time, which I will be talking about. So on this podcast, I do talk about a variety of decks, new and old, as well as experiences with those decks playing online, with friends and at locals. But today, I want to focus on two older decks, Lightsworns and Tele Knights. So if you do like those two decks, or if you just want to check out some Yu-Gi-Oh! Discussion, feel free to have a listen. So let's begin with the Lightsworn discussion. So this deck can really be hit or miss, is my principal conclusion. So you want to open Raiden or Charge of the Light Brigade, which mill, and great milling cards here. I mean, this is a mill deck if you didn't know. It really depends on luck. Even Solar Recharge, which is another draw spell that the Lightsworns include, it can be a brick if you don't have a discard fodder. I mean, sometimes you open a bunch of performance monsters or Destrudo or BLS, or, you know, if you run Jet Synchron, if you run Dotscape or Glow Up Bulb, all those cards, you can't discard for Solar Recharge. So even Solar Recharge can be a brick. But Charge of the Light Brigade is a great card because it does mill as cost. So if you get Ashed, you can still mill. So the gameplay mechanics of Lightsworns are evidence that it is an older deck. I mean, even with the new Link monster, Curious, it's a deck that still can't interrupt the opponent, doesn't stand much of a chance on your opponent's turn, it has no negates. So the advancement of the game state from cards like Curious, it really isn't strong enough to compete with newer decks. A lot of newer decks have some kind of activity on the opponent's turn. I mean, control decks, combo decks, they all have some kind of negate or, you know, some kind of floodgate, something like that, that stops your opponent from playing somehow. And Lightsworns really lack that. Unless you're going into specific XYZs and synchros, you really don't have too much of a chance on your opponent's turn. There are some other support cards, though. I mean, BLS, Envoy of the Beginning, it is a good support. It's a beater as well as a form of removal that is not destruction, banishing. But now with only one Collapse Serpent, your only dark target to banish for BLS is really Destrudo. And if you want to be using Destrudo as a tuner most of the time. So BLS can really brick. So online, I was playing against a newer deck, Rocket, which does have access to powerful extenders like Quick Launch, which is kind of overpowered in my opinion. So it just, a lot of these newer decks like Rocket do have these cards as special from the deck, or these extenders as special from the hand. And if you're playing a mill deck like Lightsworns, you are relying solely on luck. So it's very hard to start your plays and compete with these newer decks. You can't put up much of a fight against these newer decks. And, you know, Rockets do have this card, Red Eyes, Darkness, Metal Dragon, which is just another great play extender to special from the hand and to just get your play going. They can really spam the field with a bunch of these summons and a bunch of these Link monsters and these powerful Link plays. Versus some of these stronger decks, your main hope is to draw Judgment Dragon, usually off Minerva. So you normal once, you special once, or maybe you special twice to get Minerva on the field. You mill three cards, hopefully you mill a bunch of Lightsworns, and then you can draw subsequently with Minerva's effect. So hopefully you draw Judgment Dragon off of that Minerva, and you can special it to the field, blow up the board. It can really keep you in the game, and Judgment Dragon is definitely a beater too. So I have won games by specialing two Judgment Dragons on the same turn and going in for like 6,000 damage. So that is sometimes how you're winning, but again, Lightsworns is a very luck dependent deck. So online, again, I was playing Dark Lords. So they do have a lot of cards that search and a lot of cards that revive. So no hand traps in the Lightsworn deck. You know, no cards like Ash Blossom, Ghost Ogre, Ghost Bell, Effect Baler, nothing like that, because it's a mill deck. You're milling those cards to the graveyard. You're never going to see them in your hand and no way to search them either. So Dark Lords, they do have these cards like Banishment of the Dark Lords, which searches, and they have a card called Contact, which revives. So no Ash or Ghost Bell, respectively, to stop those cards. So it can be kind of hard, especially with no negates, too. I mean, it's a pretty rough day playing Lightsworns, an older deck going against these newer decks. So versus a deck like Tele Knights, which I am going to talk about in a bit. which I do also have. Do I have both of these decks? So one, a friend can grab one of these decks that I possess, and then we can have a friendly match. But Talonites do overwhelm the Lightsworns. I mean, Lightsworns, just as I've been saying, just do not have this negating power that Talonites do to stop the critical plays of the opponent. I mean, sometimes you have the Dawn Dragster or the Dweller on the field with the Lightsworns, and Dweller can really shut down the Talonites. It could be a pretty good play. But if you have a lone Dweller in the extra zone and that's all you're going for, that is not enough to stop a deck like Talonites. I mean, they can get rid of it somehow, and you're pretty much left with nothing during your opponent's turn if you're playing Lightsworns. That is the main conclusion here. So, on to Talonites. The main goal of the Talonites is to get Triver on the field. So if you don't know, or if you need a refresher, Triver is a rank 4 that bounces the entire field, so returns it to the hand besides itself. So this is non-targeting, non-destruction removal. So just a little side note here, I did try this deck with equip spells recently, and he sold, but just a tip to anyone who's thinking about that build, equip spells brick, and also you're bouncing the whole field with Triver anyway, so if you have Isolde in the extra zone, and you also have another monster underneath Isolde, you're going to be bouncing that card, those cards, with Triver. So really no point to do that. Anyway, I took Talonites to locals a little while ago, and this deck, unlike Lightsworns, can run hand traps. So in the locals, I was playing Crusadia, and I was running Triple Veiler and a couple Ash Blossom. I actually didn't get the Ghost Bell reprint until later. It wasn't out before. It was actually a $50 card when I went to this locals this one time. But they do have, Crusadia has some strong cards. I mean, they have Equimax, which can really facilitate some OTKs, but hopefully you can Veiler their Equimax. They do have Kaijus too, to establish a board presence in the upward pointing arrow of Regulex and Equimax. So, you know, those cards can gain that attack, but it doesn't hurt too bad to have a Kaiju on the field. I mean, it is a beater. If you can Veiler their Equimax and stop them from getting that attack, so they don't OTK you, you can have that Kaiju on the field as some kind of link material too. So not the worst play if you do have hand traps to stop their plays, but that really does lead me into my next point. Even if they Kaiju your Triver, it's easy to recover because you're always spamming the field with your Talonites, which can be strung together. So your Triver is just the crucial play that you're trying to bombard your opponent with over and over again. And Triver is a two-card XYZ with the help of Batlamaius. So as a refresher, again, Batlamaius is a rank 4 that requires two materials. So you detach one for Batlamaius, you discard one, and then you overlay a Triver or a Deltaros or a Constellar Diamond on top of that Batlamaius, but usually I go for the Triver. So you think about how devastating Boreload is, being a non-targeting, non-destruction removal. Triver is also a non-targeting, non-destruction removal, but of the entire field besides itself, as well as replenishing your hand with these continuous traps like Call of the Haunted or Oasis of Dragon Souls, which you use to make another Triver. So if they get rid of your Triver somehow, or if you just need another one to get another bounce effect, you can just use those traps, you can use more summon effects. It's just really easy to flood the field with a bunch of Trivers and just bounce the field pretty much every turn. So I was playing this updated version of Talonites. You still have access to these staples. I sprung for a Boral Sword and a Boreload at that time. Boreload, both of those cards were very expensive at the time, as well as Nightmare Phoenix, which is just a, you know, a staple card. Can really go in any extra deck. And because these XYZs don't take up too much space, I mean, you really need the three copies of Triver, two to three Batlamaius. I think I was running two. The one Deltaros, and maybe a Constellar Diamond if you're playing dark decks. But it's just very easy to spam the field with Talonites because they do work in conjunction with each other upon summon. So just going in for these for the Triver, the obvious Triver, as well as the Boral Sword OTK, that can always work. So I did beat Crusadia's pretty handily there. So versus an older deck, which I also possess here, you know, a friendly match between a friend, they were playing Gyrgia. Let's take a look at an updated Gyrgia deck as well as an updated Talonite deck. So the test of time really proves how strong Talonites can still be while Gyrgia really takes the back seat. So Gyrgias, they have some link support. I mean, you know, no specific links, but I mean, they have cards like Cleforge Genius, which is, you know, a machine monster, a platinum gadget if they are running the silver and gold gadgets. Maybe the Cyber Dragon link if you wanted to tech in a Cyber Dragon in Gyrgias. But the Talonites, they barely even need a link monster. They don't have one. If Konami releases a Talonite link, it should be immune to bouncing, in my opinion, because then you summon the Triver underneath it, and it won't bounce the link. But Talonites barely even need a link monster. You're pretty much using the extra zone for that Triver every turn. So Gyrgia, they can put up like a Gyrgigant X in the first turn and search. You know, in the past, they could set up a board of multiple rank 4s and 3s, one of which could be Abyss Dweller, but nowadays, they're going to be using that extra zone probably for Gyrgigant X on the first turn. Unless they go into a Link Monster, they can string together their gadgets and summon that Gyrgia Accelerator special, that card, and then go in for multiple rank 4s underneath the Clefort Genius. That doesn't happen too much, though, because they don't have that much material. So usually, as I've been saying, it's the Gyrgigant X. And how, you know, that's their boss monster, is that one search. Whereas Teller Knights, they have this devastating bounce of field with a rank 4 that takes the exact same setup as the Gyrgigant X. And it bounces the entire field, this non-targeting, non-destruction removal, which is just overwhelming. You can do it so many times. It's so easy to pull that off. Keep in mind, Altair is a one-card trigger, so you do need an established graveyard. Some people might incorporate the Foolish Burial into the engine. I've seen that a couple times, but more commonly, Unukkulhai will send from deck to grave, and you'll be tagging out your Unukkulhai for Altair using Skybridge. So when you summon that Unukkulhai, you dump to the Deneb. The Altair after Skybridge will bring back the Deneb. You search off the Deneb, so you have one more card in your hand, and then you use what cards are on the field for Batlamaeus. Discard that search from the Deneb to go into your Triver. And that is pretty much just this overwhelming play that can just really compete with modern decks. I mean, Crusadia, that's a pretty recent deck, and the Teller Knights beat them pretty handily there. So that was a pretty cool victory that I took away from that locals. Lightsworns, they do okay. I've never taken them to locals, but they struggle, but still a very classic deck, and so are Teller Knights. So another variant of Teller Knights that I do like to mess around with is Demise Teller Knights. So you do have to cut out the hand traps for this version because you are discarding off a card of Demise, and you have to play way more back row. But they are a rogue deck, Demise Teller Knights, that has really killer draw power and card/field advantage. It does lack in hand traps, that's true, and which can sometimes be a problem if you're playing as these modern decks, which often require hand traps to stop. But I've been messing around with different cards, different budget options for back row, like Stormy Mirror Force to incorporate into the theme of bouncing. Other ones include Spiritual Swords of Revealing Light and more Floodgates, like more Rivalries, more Gozen Match. Summon Limit does not work too well in this deck at all, because you are summoning. That is pretty much what you're trying to do. That's the principal mechanic. There Can Be Only One is a decent one for Teller Knights. Spiritual Swords, though, is actually a decent card, though, because you are staving off attacks and surviving like one more turn by negating attacks at the cost of 1,000 life points. If you can draw one more card off of Spiritual Swords of Revealing Light, then it's done its job, and you can actually, that can be the difference between losing and not losing. So Demise Teller Knights works. I didn't try that in the locals. I tried the standard Teller Knights with three copies of the important Teller Knights. One Alsam I was playing. I was playing three Strike because Judgment was at one. One Warning, three Nova Alpha, Twin Twisters, Raigeki, a lot of these Monster Reborns, just a lot of these OG cards. I'm not sure if I was playing Dark Hole, but now Dark Hole's at three, so that could be something that you update your Teller Knight deck with. So I do like to talk about a variety of decks from different points of the chronology of Yu-Gi-Oh! So Teller Knights and Lightsworns were probably the go-to choices for me. These are the two decks that I have a lot of experience with, and I do possess a bunch of decks, a similar variety of decks, you know, different points, contrasting points of the timeline of Yu-Gi-Oh! It's interesting to see the different matchups between old and new decks. So hopefully this proved to be a unique take on the Lightsworns and the Teller Knights, and in the future I will be posting more on my YouTube channel, which again is Average Yu-Gi-Oh! Player, so as well as discussing various decks new and old on this podcast. So Yu-Gi-Oh! Really is a great game. You do have to remember, though, that it's ultimately gambling. You are paying more money for cards that give you a higher percentage of winning. So keep that in mind. If you're testing the waters with this game, you may want to keep that in mind. But if you made it this far into the podcast, you probably already know that it is primarily, you know, I like to break down Yu-Gi-Oh! As 33% money, 33% luck, 33% skill. I hope that sounds about accurate. So anyway, more profiles are coming up on the YouTube channel, Average Yu-Gi-Oh! Player. So check that out. Subscribe if you want to. Thanks for listening to this one, and have a good one.